Mick Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
In the years gone by, Australians had a habit of booting out foreign entertainers of colour, and I do think it's important to hear these stories in order for us to move forward as a country. Some of these artists that were hired to perform in Australia: Sonny Clay, a very famous jazz musician and pianist, Nina Mae McKinney and Anna Mae Wong, both actors. They are three who suffered this fate, and I'm joined by a regular guest on the show who has actually written books on such topics, Dr. Darren Groves. Welcome, Darren.
How are you, Miff?
This just reminds us of yet another period of a very shameful racist past.
Yes.
Why is it important to study these things and share these stories?
Well, I'll read out some things that sadly sound a bit familiar, actually, the sort of rhetoric that was bouncing around in, 91 years ago. It sounds a bit too familiar, actually. But I think many people would be surprised at the number of entertainers that came out to Australia in those days, mainly because of the Tivoli circuit. The Tivoli had a theatre in Melbourne and a theatre in Sydney. And they really, brought out some pretty interesting international artists to perform. And, of course, in those days, you know, it wasn't a matter of flying in and flying out. They actually took quite a long time to sail over. And they were here often for, 4 or 5 months at least. And so when they were here, those actors, to a certain extent, were able to sort of live everyday lives. It wasn't a bit, you'd fly in today, perform tomorrow, and you're on a plane out. It wasn't like that at all. They'd rent apartments and whatnot. Anna Mae Wong actually had a dog while she was here. So there was a kind of normality, which I guess was interesting and good. But sometimes that normality started to be a bit too real, I guess. And certainly with Sonny Clay, he came in 1928.
Right. So let's start with that. He came for the Tivoli circuit.
Yes.
1928. What was Australia like in 1928 when it came to entertainment and way of life?
Well, I mean, clearly we were a pretty sheltered place. I mean, these days, you walk down Bourke Street or George Street or wherever of a weekend and you could virtually be in any Asian city in the world. I mean, our population is so kind of diverse. In those days, it wasn't quite as diverse, and outsiders were noticed. I mean, I was shocked, actually, at the advertisements, some of the advertisements that appeared in the newspapers. Some were fine, showing Sonny Clay and his band, the Plantation Band, and their show was called The Coloured Idea, which is, okay, that's fair enough, I guess, for the time. But some of the ad, one ad in particular, showed a caricature of a kind of gollywog figure eating a piece of watermelon, which is, clearly, even in 1928, it was pretty close to the bone, because there were so many other ads that they could have chosen and were quite okay.
And but what kind of publications were printing ads like this for Sonny Clay?
Well, it was
in 1928.
It was newspapers. It wasn't just The Truth, but
the Truth was a daily newspaper.
It was a newspaper in both Melbourne and Sydney. And
was it considered to be of any kind of journalistic repute, or was it not?
Never, I don't think.
No.
It was a scandal rag.
Because I only remember it in its last years, and that's all I knew of it.
I mean, when I was a kid, The Truth used to be there, and it used to have sort of, page three nudes, etc. every man that I knew bought it, always bought it for the racing tips, as they used to say,
yes.
To give it some legitimacy. But in my day, growing up in the 60s and 70s, it wasn't as bad, I don't think, believe it or not, as it was in the 1920s. Because what happened then was that the truth clearly had a down on Sonny Clay because he was an African American, and reporters were sort of pestering them all the time, and they actually reported things to the police, and there was a raid. There was a party in East Melbourne, and they raided that. And where the landlord of that particular apartment hired a couple of part-time women. One was a nurse, one was an artist, to do cleaning and bits and pieces. And they'd organised a party with Sonny Clay, and that was the raid. And just to give you a kind of feeling for it, the truth in April 1st, appropriate date, 1928, this is what they said. Empty glasses, half-dressed girls, an atmosphere poisonous with cigarette smoke and fumes of liquor, and lounging about the flats, six N-word. In this setting, Truth discovered them last Saturday night. Truth and the police, for it was on account of information gleaned by Truth in Sydney and Melbourne, and several weeks of investigation following on complaints made by the public that enabled the facts to be placed before the police, which led to the raid on Rowena Mansion Flats in Evelyn Street. And now those noisome and noxious N-word are to be shipped home by the first available boat, by the steamer which, as the shipping advertisement declares, travels the shortest route to America. Australia did not want them, and they should never have been saddled onto the theatre-going audiences of Melbourne and Sydney. And so it went.
That is shocking, isn't it? And that's from the Truth.
And that was from the Truth.
In 1928.
Yes. Now Sonny Clay maintained that, you know, it was a put-up job. And
of course, they were basically having post-gig drinks
exactly
with locals.
Exactly. And certainly, you know, all consenting adults. And it just seems to me that when you've got that kind of rhetoric happening in the press and out there, that of course, you know, these sorts of things are going to happen. And Billy Hughes, who was a former Prime Minister, he commented about this, and this is what he said. He said, Mr. Hughes referred to the recent case in Melbourne where Negroes were found consorting with white girls in a flat orgy. Something had been said about the Negroes leaving the country compulsorily on Saturday. They were actually deported. The band was deported, which is for not doing very much at all.
No.
Why? If they were in America and did the things they had done here, they would never be able to leave the country. The citizens would see to that. This is what Hughes said. And then this one struck me. This bit of the world belonged to Australians. It was them to say who should enter and who should not. And when I read that, I thought, goodness me, that sounds shockingly familiar of the last few years, in terms of the sort of rhetoric that's often going around.
It's shocking to hear that kind of thing in a current day context, but you're right, with that final line, it feels like much of the discussion that has been happening in the last few years, not just here in Australia, but in England, in America.
I know.
So it's...
We haven't progressed much if it's just that sort of thing to go on in what, 91 years?
Yeah. Dr. Darren Groves is with me. He's an architect, a pop culture historian, has actually written a book on one of the artists who were brought to Australia to perform by the Tivoli Circuit and who were subjected to some pretty horrific racism and were in fact sent back to where they came from, to use a terrible cliched term. They were sent back, they were deported, and that example there of Sonny Clay, that was the repercussions of this were quite significant in Australia, weren't they? There was a racist law that was enacted that banned all black musicians into the country until, I think, the 1950s.
Yes, that was said that the next black jazz musician who came was Louis Armstrong, who came in 1954. They kind of relaxed it a little bit in the 1930s, and certainly when Nina May McKinney, she brought her accompanists and whatnot. But the other thing was, mixed up with this kind of racism, there was also a kind of insidious sexism, where it seemed to be worse black men to have sex with white women. They were a little bit more tolerant of white men having sex with black women, which is, again, completely, what's going on?
Inappropriate. Well, look, let's take a listen to the music of Sonny Clay. He was such a talented jazz musician, a band leader, respected band leader.
Yes, and influenced the direction of jazz in Australia to some extent.
Absolutely. And we're going to hear about the artists, actors, Nina May McKinney, and also the other one that you have written a book about, Anna May Wong.
So beautiful.
So let's hear Sonny Clay. This is California Stomp. Some great stuff there from the 1920s. I played that because Sonny Clay was one of the artists who was kicked out of Australia in 1928 when he came out to perform. And sharing with us today, Dr. Darren Groves, an architect, pop culture historian, to discuss some of these cases. Australia has quite a long history of booting out international entertainers and quite a racist history. And it is important, as we've established, to share these stories and learn from them.
It's a difficult topic, there's no doubt about it. A sad one was Nina May McKinney. Nina May McKinney came to Australia in 1937, again with the Tivoli. Many of these, Nina May McKinney and Anna May Wong, suffered racism in the film industry in America, and so they went to Europe to try and where things were slightly better there. So Nina May came from a season in England to Australia. She was brought out by Frank Neal, who was then the manager of the Tivoli circuit, who, to be honest, was a bit of a nasty piece of work. There's no doubt about that. And in the end, what the sad thing about Nina May was that she had chronic appendicitis and tonsillitis. And when you're performing, that's a bit of a hard thing to carry. So she was sick quite a bit, and missed a few performances. This annoyed Frank Neal to such an extent that he actually told her that he was going to try and get a run out of the country, which in a sense he did. She had a very bad, very unfortunate personal life, lots of violence in her personal relationships. She told newspapers here, very sad story, that she tried to adopt a baby with her partner at the time, James Munro, and they had the baby for nearly a year, and then the mother took it back.
Oh.
And I mean, her whole life seems to be full of these sorts of terrible tragedies that she just sort of had to carry and bear. And often, well, Nina May and also Anna May Wong came to Australia to sort of escape the kind of Hollywood situation. She was very well, Nina May was very well known here because she was in Sanders of the River, which was quite a famous and popular picture at that particular, around that particular time. But because she was sick and homesick and all sorts of things happened to her, she wanted to extend her visa. So she employed a lawyer, quite a solicitor, leading solicitor in Sydney, Dudley Westgarth, and there were secret investigations into her behaviour because of similar things to the Sunny Clay, but not quite as bad, but similar. So there were police investigations, customs investigations, and even though they found nothing wrong, it's interesting, there's a note in one of those reports that the solicitor, Dudley Westgarth, actually, who was employed to help her extend her visa because she'd been she was in hospital in Sydney, actually said to the police that he wasn't recommending that she stay.
And that was her lawyer.
That was her solicitor. So, I mean, look, while it's not the Lawyer X case, I mean, you know, clearly this kind of thing has been going on for a very long time where you employ somebody to help you so that you can stay to try and recuperate and, you know, they're telling the police, get her out of here because I don't approve, you know, the way that she was.
And our final example, Anna May Wong, she was the first Chinese-American film star, which you mentioned.
Yes.
And what happened to her?
Well, she came out here, and again, Frank Neal just blasted her because he didn't like the way she sang. And so he tried to humiliate her in front of the cast at the Tivoli. She also had suffered things like she couldn't, in the censorship laws were such that in the movies, a black American or a Chinese American couldn't kiss a Anglo-Saxon male. So, of course, what that did when you were so beautiful and such a leading lady as Anna May Wong was completely kill your career, basically.
Goodness me. Lots of messages coming through on this topic of racism in the Australian entertainment industry. Looking at a copy of the very popular Cole's Funny Picture Book shows you a lot of the attitudes of the time. That's from one messenger. And also, I remember coming to Australia from Canada in the mid-90s, says Sophia, and watching Blackface on Hey Hey It's Saturday. I was shocked and Harry Connick Jr. went off. Good on him, I thought. But Harry Connick Jr. then got backlash from many Australians. Another one here, Marky says, hi guys, good segment. I remember, oh, don't forget, the White Australia policy was alive and well at that time. And how much did this, do you think, Dr. Derren Groves, fed into this ingrained racism?
Yeah, this is the interesting thing, I think, because there was a double standard. And Nina May McKinney commented on this, that, you know, because she was an entertainer, she was allowed into sort of social, you know, entry. And she said, but many of my black brothers and sisters aren't allowed. And she saw this kind of as a kind of double standard. Similarly with Anna May Wong. I mean, she, through Charles Lloyd Jones, she made friends with him on the boat coming out. He was the director of David Jones. And so when she went to Sydney, she, you know, she was invited to all of the parties, et cetera. But, I mean, you know, she was sacked from Paramount while she was in Australia. And to make matters worse, I mean, this was 1939 when she came out. So there was a big scramble for lots of people to actually get back to America before the outbreak of the Second World War. And who on earth was she trapped with on the boat going back but Adolf Zukor, the head of Paramount, the guy who actually sacked her? She had to go back to America on the same boat. I mean, it's just incredible what went on. Anna May Wong, I just think, is, you know, I wrote a little book called Anime Wong's Lucky Shoes, 1939 Australia through the eyes of a Art Deco diva. And really, it was a very important little element in her career, actually. Look, you know, she fell in love with white guys who were married, which didn't help the situation. And the love of her life, of course, Eric Mashowitz, wrote, you know, These Foolish Things for her, which I think is just one of the great love songs of all time, especially when you know that story, actually.
Oh, it's a very tragic story, and I'll just play a little bit of These Foolish Things, the Brian Ferry version. Oh, will you never let me be? It is such a beautiful song, isn't it?
People should listen to the lyrics, and it's just, it's a tearjerker when you understand the difficulties of the person that was written.
Oh, yes, of course. Derham, I've learnt so much today, and there's not a lot to be proud of in what I've learnt, but I've got no problem with taking that on board and being able to hopefully be aware of exactly what went on.
Well, it's a difficult topic, and any rate, I'm happy to have raised these issues.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Derham, you'll come back and share more stories with us?
No worries, Miff.
Great to talk to you again. Dr. Derham Groves, an architect, pop culture historian at Melbourne Uni, and as he mentioned, has written a book about one of the subjects that we just discussed then, Anime Wong.